What up?
You're sideways.
Hold on.
If one person was going to be sideways on this, it would be Courtney.
This, there we go. Yeah.
I thought it would change. There it goes. Okay.
There you go. What's happening?
Hey.
Oh, cool. Good to see you. Thank you for doing this.
Oh, man. Of course.
You know, funny thing, Courtney, I was doing research for this. And yes, I actually do research for this.
There's probably not a whole lot of research you have to do on me.
there's plenty out there. Actually, I have more notes right here than I do from when I had Steve Austin on.
Wow. Okay.
Yeah. So
Stone Cold CP.
Yeah, absolutely. But I know you more on a personal level than
right.
I know Steve. So Steve just gets the occasional drunk call from me if we're out on the road, and that's basically the extent of our relationship. But last night I was sitting there in bed, and you know, I wanted to take just a minute and give a little shout out. Everybody's friend Jason Rowdy Cope just passed, and hate to hear that for our brothers in the Steel Woods.
Yeah, absolutely.
That's all I'm going to say about that. I'm not going to get wax poetic or anything. He will be missed. We all loved him. We toured with him for several years and all that. So to our brothers in the woods, we love you, and our hearts are with you, and we're thinking about you. And rest well, Brother Rowdy.
For sure.
So having said that, I've been sad for the last couple of days, and I've been putting off doing research, also known as going back into our guest catalogs and listening to their music, their songs. It was about 11 o'clock last night, and I was about to go to work. I was about to go sit down and go back through your catalog. And Rebecca goes, what are you doing? And I said, man, I got to go listen to these records so I can be fresh, you know, tomorrow and do my job and, you know, things of that. And she goes, Cody, you've got Courtney on tomorrow. And I said, yeah. She goes, you don't need to be listening to her music right now. You're already sad.
Yeah.
And she made me stay in bed. I'd been in bed. We'd have been watching the game on, we had it recorded. And so, she wouldn't let me leave to go listen to your sad.
Yeah. I wouldn't say that, I mean, unless you just want to wallow more, you know?
Yeah. Unless I just wanted to get more down. Right. God. Yeah. Anyway,
I'm so sorry about that, man.
No, don't be sorry, man. That's my favorite stuff. That's my absolute dude. Give me a 3/4 sad song, and let's go, and we'll dive into that, because you're definitely not afraid of the old waltz. I guess we'll kick this thing off. My top left of the screen today, coming at you from Boyd, Texas. Josh Thompson, how you doing, buddy?
Hey, man, how are you?
I'm actually good today, and I'll tell you why I think so a little bit later. I tried something new this morning that you guys are going to have to remind me about to tell you.
Okay. I actually need to take this moment, and I hate to do this now, but I have forgotten to thank you for something, Cody.
What's that?
You may not know it, but you actually were the reason I got a Christmas present from my wife, and it's been the greatest present that I've ever gotten. Do you know what it is that I got that was your recommendation?
A punching bag.
No.
What? I don't know. That's what I asked for.
My bidet.
Oh, did you get a
tushy? Dude, that is, I did. And that has been the greatest life-changing thing that I've ever gotten.
It's wonderful.
It's been awesome. So thank you, Cody.
You're welcome.
Yes. We got to get on board at this house.
Oh, man.
I got one for my birthday, and wow, game changer, man. I mean, because we've all been to Europe and had bidets in Europe when we're on tour over there. It's lovely. It's so much fun. You think, man, this would be cool as hell if we did this at home. So congratulations, man. I'm glad you're enjoying that.
I hadn't properly thanked you, and I thought this was a great place to go ahead and do that.
on Courtney's show.
Absolutely, man.
Fantastic. To the bottom left hand, on the bottom left hand screen, coming to you from just outside of Waco, Texas, Bobby Keith Kilgore. How you doing, buddy?
Good, sir. How are you?
You feeling good?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I'm good, man. How about y'all?
Looks like you just got up from a nap.
No, I styled my hair today.
Oh, yeah, you're not wearing a ball cap. You look good.
Around the town, man.
Yeah.
Had to look nice.
Yeah, you do. You mean, like, look almost like Eddie Munster. You got the little widow's peak coming down. It's Looks good, dude. Nobody can see him. He's turned himself off right here at the bottom of my screen out of Nashville, Tennessee. From my bottom, Seth knows Noseworthy, turning the knobs out of Nashville, Tennessee. And our guest today on A Couple In, Season 2, Episode 6. I always say I'm looking forward to these with every guest because I always do, because right now we still know enough cool people to interview our friends. So everybody says yes. When I have to start asking people that I don't know, it might not be I was looking forward to anymore.
No, but you got one no. One no.
I've only had one no, and I'll drop him in the grease. And it was John Daly. John Daly told me no. But
no, Randy. Remember Randy?
Oh, well, Randy said Randy owes me a Ranchak.
Oh, okay. All right.
Yeah. So I only had one no. And Rogers, if you're listening out there, buddy, you owe me, Randy. Today, our guest is a friend of mine that played with, laughed with, spent time together, done shows together. And now we can say we've recorded together and we can talk about that. We can talk about that later because that's something people will be interested in. The just freaking awesomely talented waltzes that make you cry the way that it's supposed to be done. Courtney Patton, thank you so much.
Yay!
What's up, guys? I'm glad to see all your faces.
This is exciting.
Heck yeah, dude.
Yeah, I'm excited.
It's cathartic for us. This is like our little, we have little therapy sessions and we just, this isn't an interview, Courtney. This is a
complete. Yeah, we're hanging out.
This is a bullshit session that the whole world is going to be able to.
Right. Well, perfect. Thanks for having me.
Yes. So I told you the story about I was going to listen to your catalog last night. So I just had to get up and listen this morning. And, and it was a whole lot better. So,
okay, well, good.
Yeah. Cause last night I'd had a couple beers and, you know, and really, honestly, I wanted to go listen to your music and be sad and cry in my beer, but you know, I thought better of it. So
yeah. Especially when the kids are home, it's hard to be a parent when you're sad, when you're wallowing.
Yeah. So what are you doing?
Well, I guess probably like most of y'all, just sitting around and just going stir crazy. It's been the weirdest year of my 38 years. And so I'm ready to start traveling. I'm ready to get out of this house and just hug people. And yeah, I don't know. It's been weird. Like to be locked down at home, the plus side is seeing your kids more and being a more present parent. The downside is not having that. Like I didn't realize how bipolar my two lives are, being a mom versus being a songwriter and being on the road. And I need that part of me just as much as I need the mom part. So my heart was fulfilled, you know, on the parent end, but the crazy part of my brain was like, what are you doing? Get out of your house.
Amen.
So yeah, I'm ready for a little normal and some shows.
You know, I think you said it when you started that, you know, saying, man, I'm ready to get out and see people and hug people. And
yeah,
I never would have thought I would be the one saying something like that, but I couldn't agree with you more, man. I like, it's extremely strange. And
yeah.
And like you said too, the part of you being a parent is, I don't have to tell you, you know, you're in the same boat. We've all been home way more than we, you know, ever are around our kids. Yeah. And that has been, it's been good. In most ways, they've learned a lot more about dad than probably they knew, you know, but the crazy part of my brain is definitely, you know, the stir crazy thing, just like you.
Yep.
Oh, so this is cool too. You're one of my mom's favorites. And I was talking to her and she said, I said, Mom, I've got Courtney on the podcast. I said, what's your favorite song? And it was a no-brainer, Battle These Blues. So I think that one's kind of applicable right now.
But yeah.
Going back to a song that, you know, I just kind of got reminded by what you're saying, The War of Art, and going through, you know, like you said, having the two different things in your life, your children, and then having a career as a honky-tonker, right. Which is, I know what it's like to see my kids in a bar atmosphere with my wife standing there and everybody just looking at my wife like she's the biggest piece of shit, because you have your kids in a bar to see their dad.
Right.
That's what they're thinking about her. What they're telling me is, oh, it's so cute to see your kids here.
Right.
Now, she has to deal with it on that end. You actually have had to deal with that from the being on the stage and being a mother. And that's why I love that song so much. Tell me about it.
Yeah, that I wrote that. It was, I mean, absolutely real. It was after my divorce with their dad. And I was told at one point that his mother said, even Jesus was tempted. Your wife doesn't need to be playing country music at bars. And I just thought, what does that even mean? Like, I can't be a good person and go sing songs that I wrote. And I just thought it was the most asinine thing ever. But that's what people see. That's what certain people, especially small town America, you know, like when I go pick up my kids at school, the PTA moms look at me a little different than they do the other moms, you know? And it's just a part of me that a lot of people won't understand. They like it from the access to cool things side and, you know, the music part, but they don't like, I guess me being a mom and me being that, there really are two completely different things. And it's really hard to explain that you could be a normal person and still get to do that for a living. But
yeah, it is. It's tough enough without people throwing rocks at you, man.
Yeah.
But that song was off the, So This Is Life record, which is really the record where I came to know you. And that was about the time we were like getting to know each other and playing with each other for the first time. And I remember that record coming out. And Josh, I don't know if you remember this or not, or Keith, but we were backstage. All right, remember the old Volvo bus had the sound system on the side? We were sitting back in an alleyway behind a club we were playing in Seattle. And So This Is Life had just come out. And I remember us blasting it on the sound system, us sitting out there behind that club out there, and obviously just falling in love with the record. But I want to dive a little deeper with Still Around. And the main question I wanted to ask you, Courtney, on Still Around was you know, and I don't typically ask serious questions, but on the cover art, did the hair influence the record, or did the record influence the hair?
Is that not the worst? I was like, what was going on? Matt Hillier literally texted me that picture 2 days ago with a picture of him with bedhead when he wakes up and he's got that gray chunk and he goes, who wore it better? And I was like, you son of a bitch. Sorry, my neighbor's leaving 1 second.
He's no, no worries.
Do his drug deals. Hold on.
Do his drug deals? Is he on his way? he'll be gone in a minute. Don't worry about this guy.
Okay, sorry.
Everybody knows when he's there, though. That's the good part.
Jesus. He just gunned it when he turned the corner. It's so fun. I always think, oh, it's going to be so nice. I'll go sit on my front porch that I love so much. And then they fire up the truck and it's like, cool, let's just wait. Sometimes they'll play 90s country, which is fun, but they play it loud enough for the whole block to hear. So anyway, I'm turning into my grandmother.
You're just sitting out on the porch.
Days.
Yeah. Oh,
sitting on your front porch.
Yeah. So that hair, y'all.
Like
90s country is pretty good.
90s country is great. That's what I was saying. That was the only good thing, but it's just, you know, anyway. So that hair, that was a poor fashion choice. I call that my quarter life crisis. I don't really know. So here's the deal. I was not even working a job. I was just a stay-at-home mom, and the whole Still Around was a song that I wrote in college about a boy who ended up being my first husband. And I really thought all of these songs were just going to be, here's your old college buddy putting out a record because she's now nursing a baby at home and has no life, you know? And so my friends from college were like, make a record. And so I really literally compiled. I mean, you'll see there's a song called Filler Up Boys and a song called Cold Beer. Really deep stuff, guys, really deep stuff. So I get so embarrassed when that record gets brought up, but they really were songs I wrote in college at open mic night. And it was, you know, if I look back at it that way, that was the beginning of me like figuring out how to do this before I'd even had any kind of experience in life at all. And so if I hadn't done that and gotten that crappy stuff out of the way, then maybe I wouldn't have been able to, you know, take myself more seriously. So I know it had to happen, but I cringe every time.
You always have to have a first record.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, you have to start. So, I mean, my first two aren't even in print anymore. That's the way I feel about them.
Yeah, this one's not either. Thank God.
So, and the cover art to my first record, my first solo record, was me asking my mother-in-law to go out where Rebecca and I first lived. There was this field. I needed to go and get some like headshots done for this record, but I couldn't afford to have headshots done for this record. So my mother-in-law has, you know, like, Judy, can you bring over your really nice camera? And we're going to stand in this field and I'm going to wait for the window. Back then I had really long, nice long hair. Now it's yeah. gray and thin and it's awful. And so I just shave it off.
That was metal jinx. Yeah?
Yeah. So we go out and I got to wait for the perfect gust of wind, you know, sure. like, and then just like let it, you know, and I'm wearing this old Wrangler, like coat of many color, like just it's all the colors together yeah. in a checkerboard pattern.
Sounds awesome.
It was so bitching. Yeah.
Can we find that anywhere?
It's online somewhere.
Yeah, I want to find it.
I imagine
okay,
you
Keith,
could.
That's yeah. your task after this is over.
Find it, Keith. I'll send it over to Courtney.
Jason has one that he did the old school, like 8x10 black and white for real headshot with your name in black on the bottom.
Now I've seen those.
He had a mullet and it said Jason Lee. Lee.
Oh,
Lee's not even his middle name. Yeah.
Wow.
Just completely missed.
Yeah. Somebody was like, you got to go, you know, you got to be like Billy Ray. You got to have the two names. So he was Jason Lee. Oh,
Jason Lee.
Uh-huh. His dad still has it. His dad still has the headshots in a photo album. I'm going to see if I can find it and I'll text it to you. It's pretty great.
Yeah.
It's pretty. Mullet Jason was pretty hot.
Oh, I would love to see that. Please send that
I'm
over.
I'm on it.
Yeah. I've also got another one where it was my first official. When I was 25, I signed on with a management group and it didn't end well. So that's all I have to say about that. But that was back whenever they were wanting you to do the, you know, so you're talking 15 years ago, 16 years ago, and the Nashville thing was still real big and pretty. And you had your good looking square jawed guys that were still singing relatively country music, you know,
right.
It hadn't completely morphed. But I had the serious headshot where I was clean shaven and I had a nice haircut and I had this just kind of staring off into the distance thing going on. And I had like, I don't know, 2 or 3 million of those made, most of which are still, I think, in a box in my garage. And the funny thing about it is that I had gone through and signed them all like I was actually going to be giving them away. They're still there.
That's awesome.
Back then, nobody was like, I don't need, what is that? It's like you might as well hand in pamphlets out.
Please
for
turn them into coasters. We have to do something with this. Yeah.
We used to have some in Dirty Dolly. I remember those.
Yeah. We had one of my old headshots in our old Winnebago.
That's awesome.
But we, you know, gosh, we all, but please make a mental note to send Jason Lee over here.
You got it. I'm on it.
I would love to have met Jason Lee. Now, a month from now, I will have him on. We're talking about Jason Edie, Courtney's husband and a longtime friend of mine. And I won't give away too many secrets. Jason and I go back a long, long way.
Yeah, that's going to be cool. I'm excited for y'all's conversation.
It'll be fun. And I was just joking with Nose a while ago, too. Our next guest on is Scott Ian from the metal band Anthrax. So I was like,
awesome.
It's like you guys are sandwiching like one of the kings of thrash metal. And I was like, I couldn't have picked it any cooler.
Yeah, like, that's quite a dichotomy there. Yeah.
Traditional artists that I know and love and respect and work with, you know, and then here's, you know, one of my favorite metal guys, but we'll get there later. All right. So I asked you the funny question.
Well, let's go back to waltzes.
Okay.
Let's go.
Because we kind of brought it up at the beginning and yes, Courtney, it is I'm trying to say a nice thing when I say I'd love for you to sing at my funeral one day.
Right.
Because... but you do just have just one of those voices that's heartbreaking and it's beautiful at the same time. Is that something that you always had, or is that something you worked on, or it hasn't singing always been natural to you?
Yeah, I think always natural. I grew up singing at church. I mean, a lot of us, I think, our beginning of music had something to do with that in some way. And we moved to Weatherford, Texas when I was in second grade and had never gone to church before. And they found this Methodist church in town that had a ton of kids from my school, you know, in the youth group, and they had children's choir. And I think that's when I knew I was always very theatrical. My mom would say, as the oldest, I liked the attention. Surprise, surprise. But she said, you know, I always sang and acted around the house and did stuff. I dressed up like Vanna White, and I was very much into the spotlight. So I don't think that surprised them at all. But yeah, I just always sang, and I didn't know any different. I remember knowing that I had a difference between a proper voice and a you know, just a songwritery voice. In the fifth grade, my choir teacher asked me to sing a solo and a thing, and he said, do it two different ways. And it was the proper way, and then how would Courtney sing it if she was singing at home? And I thought, oh, I have two different voices, you know? And so then after that, you start listening to the radio and singing harmony along to everybody's songs, and finding, for me, it was like finding the part that wasn't on the record so I could still sing along with my favorite singers. And it was just always something I had. And I think, you know, people say, oh, it was a God-given gift. I think if I got one, that was it. I didn't have to work very hard at it. I played by ear. I taught myself how to play, and I just, I don't excel at anything, but it came pretty easy for me.
Well, and you're pretty open about loving the sad stuff. What draws you to that?
I don't know. And you know what's crazy? My 14-year-old daughter, she has the same thing. And she doesn't know how to explain it. She said something. She goes, it makes my heart feel warm, but also like really sad. And I was like, girl, you're just like your mom. Like, I remember listening to on Led Zeppelin, like everybody's listening to Black Dog and all this stuff. I would listen to No Quarter and Tangerine and just get really, really sad. Like, I grew up listening to classic rock. I love James Taylor because it was so mellow, and it made me feel, you know, just I love something that made me feel sad. I know that sounds so weird because I'm such a I'm the opposite kind of person, you know. I'm like really loud and outgoing, but I guess inside that's what I mean. It really gets me. Incubus, you know, I went through the whole like emo Incubus songwriter phase and just that kind of stuff. I eat it up. It's cool seeing my kid go through that. She's really into like super mellow stuff and indie music, and I love it. I did that.
Who are you influenced by right now? What are you listening to?
Man, that new Brent Cobb record is unbelievable. I'm a huge fan, and I was a fan first, but he's become a dear friend, and I just absolutely love it. What else have I been listening to? Adam Wright is an old friend of Jason's too, and he plays guitar for Leanne Womack, but he is the best songwriter that I know. And he put out a record, and it's him playing everything and clever writing, like very Roger Miller-y, but the most polished voice and an incredible musician. He can play anything. And you should, if you haven't listened to that, those are the two records that I kind of keep going back to right now.
Awesome. I was supposed to get a write with Cobb a few weeks, months. It's Blur's day. We don't know how long.
Sure. What day is
any amount of time is, but, it was one of those, it just didn't happen. We need to do it again. Cause I also am a fan of his, and I'm, you know, I have nothing to do, but like find new stuff to listen to. So
sure.
I love it.
Sure. Yeah. Those are my two, that I'm really into right now. I also welcome recommendations if there's something I should be listening to that I'm not.
You know, I've been listening to a bunch of old stuff. Okay, this is a great segue, and I didn't even mean for that to happen. You just tossed me up a meatball.
All right.
Yeah. Look, you helping me out. So I'm not a good interviewer. I'm a good bullshitter. Josh asks serious questions.
That's right.
I just talked
to
my buddies.
Yeah, he's the ringer. He brings it back in.
Yeah.
I saw how he looped it back in very gingerly earlier.
He's been doing that for 13 years on the stage, in my life, you know, whatever. It's
in life.
I love it.
he's my hetero life mate. but, you know, diving back into stuff and... we've gotten a really good opportunity to do that. And I know a lot of people have. And we've been doing that with Sequester Songwriters, and it was bound to come up sooner or later. Right. And for me personally, Courtney, and don't think that I'm doing it for any other reasons than selfish, because by nature we're more selfish than we are unselfish as songwriters and people that do this for a living. Everybody knows that. It's no secret. But diving back into Sequestered Songwriters, just catalogs from everybody, I got a cool phone call from your husband one day, and he said, "Hey, we have this idea." And that was last March. And since then, tell us what happened.
So it started, it was the end of last March, and we were all brand new to this quarantine. We'd been home for like a week or two. And we were all like, "Oh, we don't. Maybe this won't be over." But I think we all thought maybe 2 or 3 weeks. Joke's on us. It's been almost a year. So, I was in the music room putting up records. Jason was in the other room, and I don't know how it happened, but we were like, "Hey, we should get online and do a hag off virtually for Merle Haggard's birthday on April 6th." And it was just kind of one of those like lightning bolt ideas. And then I said, "You reach out to so-and-so, I'll reach out to so-and-so." And I think we asked like 8 people counting us. So it was you and Randy and Wade and Jamie Lynn, me and Jason and Hillier and Max and Heather, I think, were the original group. And it was so much fun. We just sang Merle Haggard songs. We had no idea how it was going to go. We all went live from our own page. And it was such a fun kind of loose. We all drank online. Like we were trying to like haggard it and pass the guitar. And man, we laughed so hard and we sang along with our buddies. And that was when we were glued to our phones watching music online every day. It was like, how can we contribute to that? And then John Prine died. So it was just meant to be like a 1 week thing. And then Prine passed away of the damn virus that we were all stuck at home because of. We got to do John Prine. Does anybody want to do it next week? And then everybody's hands came up again. And 52 weeks when this is over, we're going to do it a whole year, every single Monday. That's unbelievable, man. And
absolutely.
That all of you guys, we can look back and go, those are friends. And these are the people that we grew closer to during this quarantine that really helped keep us sane. I mean, I'm sure you know, like as artists, we think and we're pretty empathetic and we feel things a little heavier. It was the lowest lows I've ever had in my life. And I couldn't even put a finger on why. I think we were stuck with ourselves more than we were even, you know, stuck at home with your kids and your spouse. But you have to deal with your shit that you've kind of been putting off. And I just thought, man, if I didn't have those Monday nights, I don't know what I would do. Like it really, really, I look forward to it every single week. Hearing my buddies sing. I mean, whoever thought you'd hear Matt Hillier sing an Aretha Franklin song or whatever, you know, like just the most off the wall pairs of people going, hell, I mean, what did you do the other day when we had Seeger? You're like, here's the countryest version of this song you've ever heard.
Oh, like, God, what did I do for Seeger?
It was Fire Down Below.
Yeah. Which is like, and people don't realize how hard Seeger is to sing.
Oh, see, because he wrote everything on a piano because he's a freaking madman.
Yeah. That's funny. Well, and like
he
last
is.
Week.
He's insane.
We had Ralph Stanley and I acapella'd Odette.
Do you know how we were like high-fiving, cheering for you because Jason goes, I wonder if he's going to do it a cappella. He's like, I said, there's no way. And then you did. And we were like, go, Cody, this is great.
It was funny, man, because it gives me something to do too. And that's why I said for selfish reasons, because I've only missed 3.
Yeah. And you were traveling with your kids and had no service. And like there was a legitimate reason. You weren't just bailing.
No, I've only missed 3. I can say proudly, I am an OG Sequestered Songwriter.
You are an OG. You were on the first T-shirt.
I was going to say when this comes out or whatever the awards come in for this or whatever, or we get our plaques or or whatever it is. Like I want to be high up there, you know, because
you are. Yeah,
and
you are.
But it has been so much fun, and thank you guys for doing it. And the artists need it as much as the fans do. But now, you know, I was looking at the numbers the other day. The Sequestered Songwriters art Facebook pages is well over 30,000 now.
Isn't that crazy?
Yeah, it is.
It's insane. So we went when everybody was locked down. We were averaging, I want to say they were like 3,000 or 4,000 watching it live, depending on the artist. Like, you always had bigger hit, like bigger responses. You have a pretty rabid fan base, as you know. And I say that like, as I'm grateful because they found me because of you. So that's pretty cool. But they love you. And some of them will only get on and watch yours. And when you would get on and Wade and Randy, the numbers, and Cody Canada too, like the people watching were like, what is this? And then he'd say, go to so-and-so's page. And then they'd go to our page. And then that Facebook page went from like 200 or 300 followers to that so quickly. It's unbelievable. It was really, really cool to see something we started just to hang out with our buddies online turn to that. And it's now been a nonprofit, you know?
It's been a wonderful, wonderful thing for all of us. I mean, I'm right there in that group. You know, people have found out about our music because of this as well. You know,
right?
It's been a great thing for all of us, and it's such an eclectic group of really of badasses. I mean, people don't, you know, Walt Wilkins may not be like a big name to a lot of people, but it is here. You know,
yeah.
with the people that know him. And Jamie Lynn Wilson may not be a household name, but she should be.
Oh,
and
yeah.
You know, it's, there's so many just badasses truly. And, you know, in watching Walt, you know, and hear him saying the exercise yeah. is good for us as singers, as songwriters, as trying to, you know, figure out how to do whoever, like whatever artist is picked that week, you know, it's like, and you're sitting there going, and so many times I've shot myself in the foot. Cause I'll just be like, oh man, I just want to do that. And I'll just call it and then sit down and
try to play it.
Oh crap. I probably should have listened to that, but maybe that was why it wasn't chosen. Holy shit.
Yeah. I'm kind of doing that, a lot too. And I'll, sometimes I jump on it because I know I want it. A lot of times I let songs go. And so with Elvis, I let a bunch of songs go. And then I let Max and Heather pick my song. And I was like, cool. That's hard. And Eddie Rabbit wrote it. That's cool. So I'm learning some of these songs that I'd heard my whole life were written by somebody that I'm also a fan of their work, and just weird connections and cool stories from different artists. And yeah, some of these melodies are hard and they're band songs. So you're used to hearing, you know, Aretha Franklin with piano and horns and all this stuff. And then you got an acoustic guitar going, okay, how am I going to do this? It's pretty fun.
Speaking of Aretha Franklin, I got to tell you, Rebecca and I and the kids were driving home from Colorado, and we were coming into Albuquerque to spend the night for the night to, you know, head home for the rest of the day tomorrow. When you guys sent the Aretha Franklin next week thing, and like I was driving and I showed the phone to Rebecca, and you know, it was a text from you and Jason, and it said Aretha Franklin next week. And the first thing, because Rebecca sings a song all the time, she starts singing "Say a Little Prayer for You," you know. And I said, I have to sing that. Like that's your Aretha Franklin song to me, you know. So there's the line, you know, in the morning I wake up, I say a little prayer for you. In the morning, when I put on my makeup, you know, so like it's fun because you get to do something different and fun, and you know, it's like Jinx is singing "Say a Little Prayer for You," talking about putting his makeup on, you know.
I love it.
But you guys have taken this, and you've put your blood, sweat, and tears into it, and we really appreciate it. And but you've done something really, really good with it. And I know that you and Jason and Matt Hillier specifically have been a part of the Sequestered Songwriters Relief Fund.
Yeah.
Tell us a little bit about that. And I just think it's cool as hell, man, especially for people to do what we do.
Well, when all this started and we started doing it, I don't think any of us imagined that we'd have so many people watching it every week, and it being a little community. They even have like little inside groups within them commenting and playing drinking games. Like they listen for certain words. They pick the drinking game words at the beginning. And anyway, it's just really, it's fun watching them like congregate together and meet each other online through this. But we don't have anything that I know of. In Austin, they have HAM, you know, which is the insurance for the musicians. And Oklahoma has the Red Dirt Relief Fund, and it helps out their own. I didn't know of anything necessarily that we had in Texas like that, that would just be any kind of unexpected emergency, whether it be a health issue or whether it be you're about to lose your house or you're out of work, you had to have surgery, you know, whatever it is. It doesn't just have to be health related, but anything that upsets your ability to do your job as a full-time musician, they can reach out or you can be nominated to get emergency relief funds. So anything that we raise, people that were watching this every week started commenting and saying, we would pay to have this continue to go on. And Jason's like, we got to capitalize on that. If they want to give, we don't want the money. We were never doing it for that. We just wanted to hang out with our friends and sing songs that we grew up singing and learn stuff. You know, it's kept us fresh. I've learned a lot more about guitar since I started trying to do this too. Sorry, I get all excited talking about this, but people started donating money. And so right now we're still waiting. All the papers have been filed to be the official 501c3 nonprofit, but we are an acting nonprofit and every donation that we get is going into a savings account so that hopefully once we're able to meet as a real board of directors, we'd be able to make a difference in somebody's life that is really struggling, you know, but I don't know. It's really cool. And people have been so generous to just give, you know, even if it's like $5 every week, like thanks for Randy Travis. Thanks for this. Thanks for so-and-so. And we make a little bit of money every week just posting the Venmo link. But once we get our official nonprofit, we're going to launch the website and have other ways to donate. But yeah, it's exciting. And hopefully it'll culminate to like a once a year festival where we can all get together and sing songs, you know, one or two nights. That's the idea. And then that would be the fundraiser that keeps the fund going once we stop doing this every week. So
what an amazing thing to be a part of though, you know, that even when this is over, you know, whether you stop it at 52 weeks or choose to keep it going, do it once a year festival type situation,
right.
You know, like we were supposed to meet down in Austin in March and I had, you know, earmarked those dates. And unfortunately with the latest spike in the Rona, yeah. We're not going to be able to do that. I was very much looking forward to doing that.
Me too.
As well.
'Cause very bummed out.
Like you said, you know, not only have the fans got to see a bunch of artists they otherwise might not would have been exposed to, I now have written a song with Channing Wilson and I haven't met him face to face.
That's awesome. Isn't he yeah. the best, man?
So absolutely. You know, so it's definitely been beneficial, you know, to all of us, for the exercise, sure. And then meeting all these people. But, we did have a little bit of a respite in it, and I got to hang out with you and Jason. And it's no secret, it hadn't come out yet, but earlier you were talking about, you know, kind of bouncing off a question Josh asked how you learned how to sing, and you were saying you would sing along harmony in the car or wherever it was, trying to sing with that person, but not sing on top of them. And when all this started months ago, I kind of said, I got to do something to stay busy. So we went in and recorded some projects and you were gracious enough and Jason was gracious enough to come sing with me on my Lefty Frizzell album.
So and good. It's so
good. You were jumping up and down excited in the studio because I get to sing harmonies.
I love I mean, it's my favorite thing in the whole world. You tell this most genuine smile. It makes me so happy.
And I remember, okay. 'Cause Jason and I have the same register. We're both baritones. So having him sing with me, you know, it's hard because he's a dominant and he hears it like I'm hearing it. And I hear it like he's hearing it and stuff like that. And me and him trying to harmonize together as a group over what I had already sang was also funny.
Yeah.
But watching you like nail one in one take and then going, do you want me to sing the seventh too? I can say, I'll sing, you know, and like, we're like, yes, yes, sing the 7th, the 9th, the 11th, and the 21st, man. Yeah. Like, if you can get it, you know, like, it was an honor to have you guys in there and on that and being a part of that project.
Right?
Yeah.
It was so fun. I mean, how can you not have fun? You haven't said what it is yet. Is that still a secret?
I haven't even come up with a name for it yet. We're just now starting the whole process of getting it put out. I had the acoustic record we were working on, and then another kind of video thing that we were doing, and we're able to get those out. But yes, it's a Lefty Frizzell project. We did 9 songs, and Lefty, the first song I ever learned how to play was Long Black Veil. You know, it's in Long Black Veil in the key of C. That's where Dad played it. So that's where I learned it. And so it was special to get in there and have some old schoolers like you guys come in and help, old friends, really. I mean, you know, we're cut from the same cloth, but have y'all be a part of that.
Yeah.
God, that was fun. Like, it seems like so long ago too.
Yeah. We need to do that again.
I know. Okay. Y'all need to go do a record, and then I'll come sing on your record.
It is time. It is time. I'm ready. Yeah. I've got a slew of songs that are, I just got to get in the studio, figure out how I'm going to do it with $0. So
yeah, no doubt,
but it'll be good. I'm ready. It's to that point. This is the longest I've waited between records to make another one. So it's time.
Yeah, I hear you, man. Well, I'm sure the material's there.
I hope so. I'm pretty excited about it.
Well, Courtney, you record but write with so many people. I mean, I think a lot of people would be very surprised at how many people you write with. Is that just because of your bubbly personality and people, you know, you making friends? I mean, how did you get those relationships going?
Well, you know, I don't write with as many people as Jamie Lynn does. I kind of have a smaller group of people, and they've all been friends. I haven't had anything happen with big people, you know.
Well, then you have a lot of friends.
Yeah, I have a lot of friends, but I don't know. You know, for me, it is harder to write with somebody than it is to write something by yourself, because sometimes you have to sacrifice your idea of what you think the song's going to be about, because maybe their idea is a little bit different, or you give up lines that maybe, I don't know. It's definitely harder. But for me, the reason I started writing with more people is I got writer's block. And so even though the act of writing with somebody was harder, it got me out of not being able to write, because I really didn't have any ideas. I wasn't married to anything. You know, I just said, here's a line that I thought of. Can you help me? You know, or here's a chorus I wrote. Do you have any ideas for verses? And I've mostly written with Larry Hooper a lot. And Hooper, I know, has written with Cody as well. You're After the Fire, right? Didn't he write the title track with you?
I played that song. I did a live Facebook Thursday night and played that song. Yeah, he got the title track on that one.
Yeah, that's awesome.
Love you, Hoop.
So he and I write really well together, and we've actually never written in person together. We do it by email or text.
No kidding.
Yeah, we've never sat in a room together. And I think for me, I'm such a nervous person that it's easier for me to have that. Like, you can sing in voice memos, you can do a Zoom thing, you can I don't know, there's all these different digital ways to do it. For me, I love just give me some words, let me write on them, I'll send them back, you edit it, you know. And so Hooper and I work really well. Yeah, so we've never written in the same room. Mickey Brown and I wrote in the room together. Jason and I write in the room together. Jamie Lynn and I have written in the room together. We wrote together a long time ago, and then we didn't write together at all until like this year. So during quarantine, and we got a cool duet we wrote. And Jason and I have been writing a lot more together. He went on a little whirlwind week where he got like 20 something songs written in one like 48 hour period. It was ridiculous. The guy is a beast. When he like, when it starts moving through him, it's like, leave him alone. Don't talk to him. Don't tell him to brush his teeth. Just let him do what he does. You know, it helped me learn how to work with somebody else, but it also helped me just get little ideas that I wasn't, if I'm emotionally tied to something, it's harder for me to ask somebody to come in and finish that with me just because I'm such a specific writer. Like I will write exactly what happened down to the color, and if the color doesn't work I will reword something to make sure. I'm such an honest songwriter, which is kind of a flaw because I can't let things go sometimes and it drives people crazy. So anyways, co-writing helped me get out of that a lot. So yeah, it's a good tool.
I was about to say, you don't have to put many context clues together for a lot of your songs.
Sorry.
No, I love it. I think that's why I enjoy, because you don't. It's to the point. It's personal. And, you know, it is what it is.
But when I don't, you know, I've also learned that too, that the more personal song that you write, like, I mean, it, how specific it is to you, more people relate to it. I don't know if you've noticed that, but I mean, like I wrote a song about my sister. It was about how many years she'd been gone, and it was the color of the candle I gave. It was very specific to me and her. That song is more relatable than anything I've ever written because somebody's lost somebody. Mm-hmm. So to them, this reminds me of my dad, and this reminds me of my brother, and that, you know, like, and they their story is completely specific to them, but when they hear it, that's where they go. And that's really cool to me that like my grief and very specific pain is so relatable to so many people. What a gift, right? That we're able to do that.
It is. And
it's so crazy to me.
You know, I think there's such a parallel between, you know, cause you're 38, I'm 40. You know, we're in that same demographic. When I was a younger writer, I had to write those songs for myself.
Yeah.
And like you said, very detail specific. And, once that was the idea, I couldn't get off of that. I couldn't, mm-hmm. you know, and therefore I had a difficult time writing with other people.
Sure.
Over the years, you know, you learn that you can find certain people that you trust. Like, you know, you mentioned Larry Hooper. I trust what Hooper writes and
sure.
you know, he trusts what I write as well. And you find those people to where you can say, you know, and it's not that you're saying I can't do this by myself anymore, but I got to the point to where it was like, I need another perspective than mine.
I know this song will be better if I have help, you know, like I know that. Yeah. Sometimes you just can't take it where it needs to be just from your point of view. And so having somebody else come in and polish it up, it's.
And also finding groups of people or certain people that you can give them the idea and say, hey, look, I have this, wanted to see what you thought about this, and you sent it to them and they go, well, what if you do this? And, or, you know, what if we sang it like this or this? And then you go, no, I like it. I'm my way better. And them going, totally cool. See you later. You know, like the trust with those types of people and not getting butt hurt. Like, cause whenever you're writing with people and you say a line, it's like, all right, man. All right. What do you think about, you know, and nobody says anything, don't be like, hey, what do y'all think about da 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 da?
Right.
Yeah, we heard you. You know, that's something. Yeah. You know what I mean? Like, learn to take cues, you know, like, hey, my line might not have been the best one there.
Sure.
You know, so yeah.
Yeah. Jason says that too. His favorite people to write with are people that aren't afraid to say stupid stuff.
Oh God. I tell you what, man, I got to write the other day with Jim Lauderdale. Through a write that Kendall Marvel had set up, and Kendall and I probably have written more songs together through this pandemic than I've written with anybody else.
Yeah. He's great. He hopped on our sequestered that one week.
Yeah. He's a super good dude. You know, we've become really good friends. I met him through Ward Davis several years ago. And, anyway, we were on a write the other day and he set up with Lauderdale, and I'd met Lauderdale before, but I was so pleased. We did a Zoom call like this, and Jim, if you don't, sequestered songwriters know who Jim Lauderdale is. You know, not everybody does, but he's the king of broken hearts. He has, and the guy's got a documentary about him. He's written for everybody, all kinds of wonderful songs. And he would go, "All right, I got this idea, man. You guys just let me know if it's too crazy or out there, you know, just, you know, it's cool. Don't worry about it, you know," and he'll rip off this line. And even with Jim, sometimes we wouldn't say something. And right. it was moving on. And sometimes it was like, "Oh, that was some cosmic shit, Jim. Yeah. What'd you say again?" You know, like it was more that than it was the other. But, you know, just being that type of writer and being the type of writer that, you know, takes cues and is unselfish. Let the song do what the song's going to do, you know?
Yeah. Yep. I got it. I still have a long way to go, you know, branching out and Adam Hood, you know, writes for a living. Like he's.
And well, there's another. Let's hit on him. Go ahead.
Okay. Yeah. Love so that Adam, guy. Ad, is he? Are you about to have him on?
I'm going to have him on. He doesn't know yet.
Great. Yeah, he's great. Adam is Adam's incredible and a dear friend, best man in our wedding, and he writes. I asked his advice because he writes with all kinds of people all the time, you know, and. In rooms in front of them and that's how he prefers to do it.
At my house.
Yeah, he came over and wrote with you. That's right. Mm-hmm. And I asked him, I said, "So I wanna write more. I wanna start writing with people I don't know." And Jason did a Zoom thing and he was talking about it. And Adam goes, "Look, yeah, you can do it. You don't want to go into a Zoom with strangers and it be your first Zoom session." I was like, "Okay, well then will you be my first Zoom session so I can just get it over with somebody?" Because he said, you know, it's a thing you got to get used to, writing by Zoom and not interrupting each other. And there's like a whole flow to it. And I thought, "Oh, I don't want to be nervous with strangers doing that." So he told me he would pop my Zoom writing session, Jerry.
Oh, good. Well, I'll tell you what, once your Zoom writing sessions, Jerry's popped, like we'll hop on one and we'll see if we can get one.
Well, hell, you can do it. Yeah, it could be an equal opportunity cherry popper.
Well, welcome Courtney Patton back to the show, everybody. Yeah. You're a couple in with Cody Jinks.
I figured if it's called that, and this is a
you know what? This has been one of the most PG ones. We used to curse like sailors, and the audience knows we started this on the road, doing this from the tour bus with bands that we were touring with.
Oh, yeah.
And so we would basically just get like drunk and high and have a bullshit session. And we're our second season in, and we've actually started taking this shit seriously.
Yeah. And you're asking real questions. I'm proud of y'all.
Yeah. We're doing like big boy job here. So, but we still have fun, man. And, we still do curse, but you know, the story I wanted to bring up was a video from, I don't know how long ago it was, maybe in the 5 to 7 year range, okay. But it was you and me and Daryl Dodd at Luckenbach.
Double D.
You, me, and Double D at the outdoor stage at Luckenbach. I still can't remember what time we were all supposed to start. It was one, and for some reason I thought it was two. And I had actually been pretty well behaved the night before, because if I'm not mistaken, I think it's like, was that the time we had a doubleheader there, Josh?
Yeah, you guys played the night before and had a big show.
That's
and
right.
Then y'all were supposed to do this for, it was like a canned food drive or something that Abby had asked us to play.
Okay.
The three of us. And so, yeah, you and Daryl had been there the night before, I believe. I know you had.
Yes, it was me and Daryl. And Daryl had pulled an all-nighter drinking.
Yep.
And we had a 1 o'clock show. I had actually behaved myself as much as behaving as I do. I just didn't stay up, watch the sun come up, you know.
Right.
And my phone started going off about 12:45, you know, and it said something along the line of, "You MFers better not stand me up."
I was sweating it. I was like, oh my God, if I have to carry a four hour show by myself.
It's Courtney by herself. It's supposed to be a three man swap, and she's by herself 15 minutes for showtime.
And half of the people that were there last night just stayed over and were waiting for you the next day absolutely. As well.
Oh man, I'm getting nervous just thinking about it again.
And Daryl was late because they were having a hard time getting him up and functioning
with coffee. Yeah.
Yeah. And,
hey bud.
Yeah. And had to help tuning the guitar that morning and all that. So I text back, what are you talking about? You know, it's 2 o'clock. You're like, no, it's one. I'm like, shit. So I'm hauling ass up there, and me and Daryl show up right before about 1 o'clock at the same time. And you thought that I had been hungover as well.
Yeah, I thought you both were. Yeah,
I just had my times wrong. But Daryl felt like hammered dog shit.
Oh, yeah. It took him a good 2 or 3 hours to just even feel like a person again.
It took him. He had to get a couple beers down him. So. Yeah. You know, anyway, that was it ended up being a really cool day. And there's a great video on YouTube of that. And the three of us have all got a lot of mileage out of that video. And
I mean, overseas mileage, you know, it's unbelievable how many people have seen that video.
Yeah. You know, people come up and they're like, we learned about Courtney Patton or Daryl Dodd because we were watching this. We were looking through your videos and like, we love all of y'all now, you know, and this and that. And I know the same thing. You guys have heard the same thing. But one thing, and go listen to the video really, guys, on YouTube. It's really a lot of fun because even if we don't sing the right words, like, we hit some pretty cool harmonies with our mess ups. It was great, you know?
Yeah. Oh, it was fun.
It was a magic day. But one of my favorite parts of the day was, you know what I'm going to say too, don't you? Yeah. So one of my favorite parts of the, Josh is laughing because he knows what happened too.
I mean, Courtney's, what are the odds?
Courtney's sitting in between, Daryl's on stage right, I'm on stage left. Courtney's sitting in between us, you know, naturally you put the female in between you because it's better. It looks better. So we're playing, man. We're just having fun. We're just jamming, like playing whatever off the cuff and just going with it and having a good time and drinking some beers. And it's a 4 hour show, you know, so we swapping stories and laughing, you know, and if you've never been to one of those afternoon shows at Luckenbach, you've done yourself a great disservice as a music
fan. Oh man, they're so great. It's under those big old trees. It's perfect. Yes,
it's magic. And if you've never done it, never played one, play one. If you've never gone to one, go to one.
But go to one, yeah.
When we can. We're sitting there, and Courtney's got a long neck bottle. Like, we're just bar stools, you know, and, you know, just got to lean over, pick your beer up, and take a swig, and, like, she just turns and spits beer all over. It was basically my right leg and my guitar cable and my guitar tuner. All the beer that was, probably a
gullet. Gullet to, like, just open mouth.
If you've seen her drink, she turns a beer up and just lets just lets it go down. You know, kind of, if y'all have seen me drink, that's kind of how she does it. So she turns, gets a big old gullet full, just showers my leg, my guitar tuner, my just everything just that was directly in front of me. And everybody just kind of turns like, what the hell just happened? And she was like, I'm so sorry, y'all. A bee flew down in my beer. And she drank that damn bee and was spitting it out.
I got the bee down on the back of my throat. It didn't sting me on anything until it hit the back of my throat. And then I spit it out and the motherfucker flew away.
Yeah.
Like Jonah and the whale.
Oh, my gosh. I mean, I you cannot make it up. Like, you watch them swarm around your beer all the time. I had no idea because it was a dark. I was probably drinking a Miller Lite. Flew down into it.
Oh, nobody knew it was there. He was just down there. He didn't drink much. He just got caught.
Man, I was so lucky it didn't sting me. That's what everybody's like. Did it sting you? I was like, no, but that's why I had to spit everything out, because if I would have swallowed it, it would have got me.
And it was coming. It was coming out, and it was coming out. Like projectile vomit style.
Man, I was terrified. Yeah. I felt so bad. I was like, I'll buy you Tudor. He's like, it's good.
No, it was fine. You know, I mean, it worked. It didn't short circuit anything. It wasn't that big of a deal. We made it.
Yeah,
it was,
you only got electrocuted mildly.
Yeah, mildly. The next song I sang, I kind of got that little blue arc going from my mouth.
Golly.
Well, that's what you get for being late.
Yeah, that's
I think I probably said something like that to him. It was
probably. Yeah, you probably did. But yeah, you MFers better not stand me up. It was something to that effect.
Yeah. I've never been one to hold things in too much. It's good or bad. You take it, you get what you get. And I guess that's a good thing. I'm pretty transparent. So
God, it's a funny story. It's a favorite story of mine because, you know, that's one that's going to live on. And in 30 years, whenever this next crop of little badasses is singing their songs and they grew up listening to us, they're going to be telling the story of the time that Courtney Patton spit
a beer
all over Cody Jinks in Luckenbach, you know, and that's just going to be one of those really cool stories.
Yeah. And then somebody's going to find an old computer and plug it in because they're going to have microchips in their brain. All they're going to have to do is like visualize something and see it. They're going to have to go pull out a computer, plug it into the wall and charge it to watch a video on YouTube.
Yeah, they will.
What is it going to be like? I mean, think about how much has changed in our lifetime. And how much faster it's changing now for our kids. What is that gonna look like? We're going back to vinyls. So what is even beyond that? Are we gonna go reel to reel? Are we gonna take it retro back even more further, you think?
I don't know, man. I think we need to stop at vinyls. I think everybody is in agreement.
Yeah, and analog, yeah.
The vinyls, you know, do analog. That's about as far back, I think, as we need to take that.
I agree.
As far as unmusic related, just, you know, people plugging, you know, wires into the back of their head like Johnny Mnemonic and things of that nature. I think that there's people that are really excited about that.
Yeah.
And that really would embrace that as being like, man, this is next wave. This is like some super cool stuff. To me, it's like, no.
Just watch Black Mirror. I mean, I binge watched that show and I'm like, nope, I'm good.
Yeah. I have too. Yeah, I had to quit watching that one. But like this notebook computer that sits on my desk in my office right here. You know what I use? This computer that does way more things than I know how to do. You know what I do on this computer?
What's that?
These. That's it.
Yeah.
I mean, I get on the computer to do these. And
I don't even have a computer. I don't even have an iPad. Y'all, I just don't. It's like Jason has all the stuff. He gets sucked in. And when people say, can you print this and fax it back? I was like, nope.
Nope.
I can't. Can I sign it digitally? Because this is all I have is my phone.
Well, good. When the zombies come, Courtney, and everybody's plugging
their heads. They're going to get Jason, not me.
Plugging their heads in to shit. You know, me and you are going to be.
Yeah, I'll meet you at a water and hole.
I still write my songs. I don't use a computer. I still use pen and paper to write my songs.
Too.
Yeah, so we'll grab a lantern and a pen and paper and sure. go do it analog.
Absolutely. I'm all about it. And I'm not old school. Like, I'm not a fuddy-dud, but I'm that technology stuff, it's, I don't know. Maybe I'm going to start writing a manifesto. I'm turning into conspiracy theorist.
Well, you dove into Adam Hood a while ago, and I want to earmark that too. Yes, I want to get him on the show. But Adam and Jason and I and Eric from Midnight River Choir.
Yeah, Eric Middleton.
Eric, and me and Adam and Jason happened to all be in Amarillo one night. That was the first time I'd met Adam, and we passed a bottle of some brown drink around and a guitar. That was fun, man. That was how, because I'd already known Eric.
When was that?
I think it was
6 years ago, maybe.
Okay.
Somewhere around there.
Yeah.
Somewhere around like 2015.
Yeah, we were at Hoots that night. And
okay.
All three bands, or I guess we're at different locations, but that was the first time I met Adam. And then obviously the sequestered songwriter thing, I don't think that he and I would have written had we both not been a sure. part of this. So he was coming out to West Texas to do a show. He lives there in Alabama and reached out, and I was just like, dude, I'm just at home. So,
right.
You know, you're welcome to stop by. We have, you know, room and all that kind of stuff. So he came out, man, and we ended up getting one written on the back porch. And I actually, I did a private party, the only one that I've done a few months ago. And I played that song. It's a beautiful song. Yeah.
Yeah. He played it for us. Okay. So I want to ask about a funny thing that happened that was an inside joke with Sequestered Songwriters between you and Wade Bowen.
Yeah.
You were wearing, Wade was wearing a turquoise golf shirt. And
I think it was even turquoise. I don't like, it was a type of turquoise, but uglier.
Yeah. Yeah. Aquamarine.
Yeah.
And you busted his balls pretty hard about the shirt.
I did.
And so he mailed you one.
Yeah, he did.
And you wore it the next week.
And I did wear it. It came in on a month, because everybody knows I wear like black or flannel or, you know, my friend's band shirts or whatever, you know. And Wade had been at the golf course, and Wade and I, it was funny. Wade's like the last guy that I've met in this,
yeah,
in this scene. We've crossed paths for 15 years. We've even played on the same show, but both had to leave and we didn't get to meet.
He's the sweetest guy.
He is. You go on and on about Wade Bowen. He's the best.
Yeah, he's the best.
And so he did one of the first podcasts that we did early in the season last year. We had just gotten this thing going. Wade was actually one of our first guests. So, he had on this awful shirt, and I was busting his balls because he had just come in off the golf course. And I was like, you actually wore that in public? You know, like, that's just a hideous, awful. So the next week, on a Monday, it came in the mail that day. I put that shirt on and did my song in that shirt. And I was like, I don't even know what color this is, Wade, you know.
He texted me and he goes, okay, I need you to get Cody's address at his house. And I need you to not tell him it's for me. I was like, oh, great. I'll just tell him I have some new shirts to mail him or something.
Yes.
Man, he was so excited about that.
No, it was funny. It was worth the joke. I'm sure his 1999 was worth mine and his laughing both. And I still have it. It hangs up in my, you know what that shirt sticks out like in my closet?
Oh, I cannot imagine. Yeah.
The sore thumb. That's what that shirt, it's like that Wade, you know, so we still laugh about
keep it
that.
Forever. Yeah.
I use it as a divider.
That's awesome.
There you go.
It's a divider.
That's the divider.
Between jeans and shirts.
Yeah.
Shirts and home shirts.
Yeah.
Wade's divider.
Black and not black. Or black and gray. Black, you know.
Yeah.
Oh, man. Oh,
that's too good.
Before we get this wrapped up, the boys were going to hit you with we didn't want you getting out of here thinking we hadn't asked you the really hard hitting
questions
that journalists should inquire upon. I'm going to let the guys, just hammer you down. This segment is called Why Do I Know This? And this is Why Do I Know This with Josh and Bobby Keith.
Oh, I'm nervous. Okay.
All right, boys.
Bobby Keith, go ahead.
A morning person or a night owl? Yes, ma'am. Oh, you can do whatever you want.
I'm a night owl.
You can elaborate,
I'm a night owl for sure. I mean, that's easy.
Favorite video game, past or present, if you ever played them?
Super Mario Brothers.
Yeah.
Nintendo. Nintendo 2, right? Wasn't that what that was? Super Nintendo.
A and B, run and jump.
Okay.
The favorite 2 a.m. meal?
Whataburger. Number one with cheese, water, size, and fries, not the drink.
No onions.
Not the drink. Like
that's also my desert island meal, and that's my prison like electric chair meal.
That's anybody that has ever been on tour through Texas and Oklahoma and not too far out, but kind of Texas Central. You know your favorite Whataburger meal by heart.
Yeah,
it's absolutely. Not even like number one. Like, okay, check this out. This is funny. This is how in depth in Whataburger knowledge, you know. So number one with cheese, no onions was always mine. But I would be number one with cheese, no onions at jalapenos. And like 3 years ago, this dude goes, why don't you just order a number four with no onions?
Oh, man, he ruined it for you.
And I looked up and I was like,
I'll be damned.
I said, well, dude, because I hadn't looked at that menu in like 20 years, yeah, man. You know,
all I know is the price just kind of kept. It used to be definitely under $5. And now it's like inching up, you know, but whatever. It's fine.
All right, Josh.
Courtney, do you believe in ghosts?
I need to elaborate on this one.
Come on.
So I didn't necessarily, although I've had some dreams that I thought somebody's trying to talk to me, you know, like family, weird things that happened when you weren't thinking about them and they can never talk to me. Like they, like whatever the, this energy is that they're using to talk to me, they can't physically talk to me, but like they're saying everything with their eyes. So it's something, but I live in a house, this 100-year-old house here. And the man that lived here, I'm trying to research who built the house. We want to get a historical marker. The man that lived here, his granddaughter reached out to me and sent me some family pictures that they had taken on the front porch when they were little. So she was probably like 3 or 4, and it was her grandfather and grandmother, and they were the first people that lived here. Well, I was home alone one night upstairs in our bedroom, and I woke up. I was sober. For the most part, I had not drank that day. I woke up, I was sober, and I heard somebody walking up the stairs, and our house creaks, and I have cats, but the cat was in bed with me. And so I looked around and I saw an old man in a wife beater and a long John underwear walking up the stairs. He was bald, and he walked into my room and walked to Jason's side of the bed, opened the closet, and he was gone. Okay. Okay. I don't know. I remembered it so vividly that I woke up and texted my kids and Jason, and Jason said, had you had anything to drink last night? And I was like, no, like totally no. This chick, fast forward, sends me pictures of the house and her grandpa. And it was that freaking dude.
Oh my goodness.
I don't know. So I don't know. I had no way to know what Mr. Henry looked like at all, but it was that freaking guy. And I was like, okay, either my brain is just really creative and I'm thinking things, but I saw through the dude. So it wasn't like a real, I know there's not really somebody in my house. I didn't scream, but I sat straight up and looked with my own eyes. I don't know if it's real or not, but I'm just telling you, I just thought it was really strange. It could have been a dream.
I think you've seen a ghost. You just don't believe in him yet.
Yeah, I don't know. Who, if there's a ghost in this house, he's nice.
Okay, well, good.
And I'm not scared. You know what I mean? Like, I've had, I don't know, there's a really positive energy in this house. So I don't feel scared by it.
Okay,
good. I don't know. Yeah, you're right. I definitely think I saw a ghost, but I don't know if I really believe in him. So, okay.
Well, so this question was brought up by your, what's the future going to be like? So would you rather have a robot that fixed all your meals, or a robot that did all the house cleaning?
Cleaning, for sure. That's easy. I love cooking. I love food, if you can't tell by my sweet little cheeks. Jason and I enjoy cooking, like soup, like learning things from other cultures. And one of our favorite things about traveling is eating all the foods, and then we come home and make them. So no, I would rather have somebody clean my house for me and do all the dishes and all that, and then I get to cook.
That's the correct answer. Good job.
Yeah, good.
And lastly, have you ever ran a vehicle out of gas?
No. Yes. Once. Once. So my ex-husband, he did it a lot, but he was so good at it that he could catch it on a hill and coast down a hill. We were leaving Stephenville when my son, who is now almost 16, he was in a car seat and his sister wasn't born yet. So he was probably 1. We were driving to Colorado to go snow skiing, and we left the house at like 4 a.m. We get up to around Eastland or somewhere between, you know, the Stephenville exit and Abilene. And he sputtered out on the interstate, took the access road, caught it, made it up the hill, and rolled all the way down the hill for a mile or so and made it into the gas station and rolled right up to the pump. And I was so mad at him for being an idiot, but I was so impressed by him too, you know? So when I ran out of gas, I called him. And I don't even think we were together anymore. And I was like, dude, I don't know who to call. And you cannot get mad at me because you did it and I was in the car with you. But I tried to do your trick and put it in neutral and roll down the hill, and I didn't quite make it down the hill. So I need you to come fill me up. And so he did. He drove out there and shook his head and brought me a gas tank and filled up the car, and then it was on the way. So yeah. Beautiful. One time.
It happens to the best of us.
Sure.
It happens to the best. Man. I love it. Courtney, thank you so much. We could go on and on and on. And, it just story and stories. But we found that running these things about an hour is the sweet spot.
That's good.
It's long enough to get like the important stuff out of the way. And then like a few of the funny stories. But, you know, we've got lots more stories to make together.
Yeah.
And more music to make together.
Absolutely.
And I was serious about that Zoom call idea.
Let's do it.
If you want to, man, we can sit. We can get me and you and Hoop on, man. You know, it's
that would be fun.
Yeah, it's whatever, dude. I'm down.
I've got a lot of one-liners I'm ready to write, so I'll reach out and we'll get that scheduled. That would be fun.
I'd love to. We ain't got nothing else going on. So, all right. I tell you what, Courtney Patton, y'all check her out. Courtney, plug sites and the social medias and all that. What do you got?
So CourtneyPatton.com, Court_Patton on Twitter and Instagram. I don't really do much on Twitter anymore, but it is there if you want to go back through the archives when I used to. But Jason and I are playing a two-show night at Eddie's Attic on January 28th. And then Jamie Lynn and Caitlin Butts and I are playing Green Hall on Saturday, February 20th. I think all the tables inside are sold out, but there are still some outside, and they have a really cool LED screen up. So those are my two big ones coming up.
And if you haven't seen any of those people she listed, I've either seen or played with all of them, and they're wonderful.
They're awesome.
Yes. Yep. Yes. So do
Caitlin
yourself
Butts,
a favor.
Jamie Lynn Wilson, and Jason Eady. And Jason will be on next month.
Jason will be on next month. He will be in 1 month from now. He will be on, and we're going to sandwich Scott Ian from Anthrax in between, between you guys. But thank you for taking the time. Y'all get some Courtney Patton in your life.
Thanks for having me, guys.
Sequestered Songwriters, which we record this on a Monday. Today's a Monday, and we are doing Elvis. So by the time they know that we're doing Elvis, we will have done Elvis. But
and then we'll be doing Bonnie Raitt. Yeah.
And we got Bonnie Raitt.
We got Bonnie Raitt next week.
This is okay. Bonnie Raitt is big in my house.
Me too, man.
Yeah, my wife was raised a Bonnie Raitt fan. That's awesome.
Yeah.
Very cool.
It's gonna be fun.
Well, all right, for Bobby Keith Kilgore down in Waco, Texas.
Thank you.
Yeah, thanks, man. For Josh Thompson out in Boyd.
Hey, appreciate it. Thanks, Courtney. It was a lot of fun today.
Yay. Yeah.
Seth Noseworthy out in, there he is, out in Nashville, Tennessee, turning the knobs.
Hey, y'all got the same hat.
Oh, yeah.
Oh,
awesome.
Look at that. Seth and Josh both are wearing Wade Bowen hats.
Yay, I love it.
Super cool. And I'm Cody Jinks. You are listening to A Couple In, and this week has been our guest, but more importantly, our friend, Courtney Patton. Thank you so much.
Thanks for having me.
Appreciate y'all. That's a wrap.